Don't be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Make purses for yourselves that won't wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Be ready for service and keep your lamps burning, like servants waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door for him. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. Truly, I tell you, he will dress himself to serve, will have them recline at the table, and will come and wait on them. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them ready, even if he comes in the middle of the night or toward daybreak. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he wouldn't have let his house be broken into. You also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you don't expect him. May God bless the reading of Holy Scripture. The Presbyterian Youth Triennium at Purdue during July had as its theme, "Here's My Heart." Like I told you, we took about 20 students and 5 or 6 adult sponsors from John Calvin Presbytery, from our network of congregations, and we traveled on a charter bus, and charter buses have improved recently, if you haven't ridden on one. They're pretty nice. From Springfield to West Lafayette, Indiana. And there we joined young people from all over the world. Christian mentioned some of the places. I met people from Puerto Rico, Canada, Hungary, all over the place. So through games and music and singing and meals and small groups and lots else, it was a week that invited all of us, kids and adults alike, to say to God, "Here's my heart." And today, Oliver, Christian, and I bring back to you from Purdue, from the Youth Triennium, that same invitation so that you, too, can join in that offering, that prayer, saying to God, "Here's my heart." Later this morning, we'll sing a hymn that has these words, "Come, thou fount of every blessing, tune my heart to sing thy grace. Let thy goodness like a fetter bind my wandering heart to thee." And then in the final line of that song that we'll sing, "Here's my heart, O take and seal it. Here's my heart, Lord." And in our gospel reading today from Luke's gospel, Jesus teaches us to give our hearts to what matters most. Where your treasure is, says Jesus, there your heart will be also. Jesus repeatedly teaches us to tend to our hearts, to keep our hearts free from fear. In Luke chapter 12, he tells his followers not to fear those who threaten us with harm. He tells us not to fear losing our lives, since God knows the number of hairs on our heads, which in the case of some of you isn't all that magical, I guess. He tells them not to worry when they're hauled before authorities and put on trial. The Holy Spirit will give them in that moment what most needs to be said. Jesus' followers aren't to worry about the daily needs of life, what they'll eat or what they'll wear. God will make sure they have clothes and food, just like God takes care of the birds of the air and the flowers of the field. So that solves it, right? This is easy. Have your worries now disappeared, now that you've heard Jesus' teaching? Are our hearts consistently, always pointing us in the direction of life abundant? Well, it's harder than it sounds, right? This teaching about keeping your heart free from fear and directing your heart to what will bring you the deepest joy, this continues on in the passage we read this morning. Don't be afraid, little flock. Don't be afraid, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Now, it may come as a surprise to you that you've already been given God's kingdom, but you have. And not only have we already received it, but God takes delight in lavishing this gift upon us. Yes, we all know that our lives are full of struggle and pain and difficulty. We know that the world can often be a cruel and violent place. So what on earth is Jesus talking about when he teaches us that God's kingdom is already here, already ours as a gift? For Jesus, receiving God's kingdom simply means living in the light of God's new gracious rule. And that rule is already here, already on the scene. We're already living in it. We're already swimming in it, even though it's not yet here in its fullness. It's a little bit like smelling a meal that's cooking on the stove, or even taking a little taste of it while it's still cooking, even if it's not yet done and the dinner table's not set yet. Jesus tells us that the Father takes delight in flinging this newness into our midst. It comes as a gift that washes over you and it pulls you into this new reality, whether you're ready for it or not. You don't have to work for it. You don't have to achieve it. You don't have to manufacture it. You don't have to make it happen. You don't have to whip it up or produce it from scratch. It's already been given to you, says Jesus. Just open your hands. Open your life. Open your heart. And welcome it in. Now that all sounds great. But in the very next breath, Jesus says, don't fall asleep. And don't think that you can welcome this new reality in the posture of passivity. This gift of God's kingdom comes to us and calls us to action. It comes to us and it inspires us to make changes. It inspires us to shift gears, to realign our priorities. Jesus comes to announce that God has given us a gift, and then he immediately calls us to the work of enacting, theatrically enacting that gift of that new kingdom and that new way of life in our own lives. Did you notice the verbs that come next in Jesus' teaching? Sell, give, make. So first, sell. Sell your possessions, Alicia told the kids. Get rid of some stuff. Clean out the closets. Have a garage sale. Take some stuff to a consignment shop. Not a bad idea, right, Angie? List what you have. Put it up for sale. Get rid of it however you can. Lighten your load. Clean out the closets, the cabinets, the basement, the storage bins. Wherever you've stuffed stuff, get it out and sell it. You can't be nimble and flexible like you need to be to welcome God's kingdom, says Jesus, if your life is weighed down by all sorts of cares and concerns about the things that you have. Sell. Next verb, give. Give alms, says one translation. Give to the poor, said our reading. Share some of what you have with those who don't have much. Make life a little easier for those who have it harder than you do. Spread the wealth, whether that's money or time or talent or expertise or attention. Let the goodness that has flowed into your life flow through you to bless the people around you. Give. The third verb is make. Make purses for yourselves that don't wear out. Decide what's most valuable to you and then go get that. Run your calculations, put pen to paper, figure out what you want more than anything else, and then figure out how to get it and keep it. Be done with storing up the kinds of things that can fade, wear out, run down, be lost or stolen. That's what Alicia was trying to help the kids understand. For nearly 20 years, I had this leather wallet that I loved. The soft leather and its hand stitching had so delicately shaped itself to my rear end that it had become a comfortable part of my anatomy. I was in Florence, Italy in 1999, and we were walking around. We stumbled across the shop of an artisan leather worker. The smell of the leather in that shop was so wonderful. The leather was so soft to the touch. The designs were so beautiful that I knew I had to buy something. And I did. Unfortunately, I bought a leather jacket that I have never worn. I can't think of a single situation in life where I would look good in this leather jacket. It's ridiculous. And it was kind of expensive, so that was dumb. But that's all water under the bridge, because I also bought this elegantly simple leather wallet. This wallet carried my cash and cards for nearly 20 years. Over time, the wallet's stitching, hand stitching I might add, began to wear out. I took it to John Renard on multiple occasions. Twice he stitched that thing back together. when I took my wallet back to him a third time. It was just in two pieces. John looked at me like a surgeon with bad news. He said, "Jared, there's nothing I can do." So just last year, after 20 years, my wallet had given out, and I'm embarrassed to admit that I now carry a faux leather wallet that I bought for $9.99. It's a sad story. It won't be long before I'm carrying my valuables around in a Ziploc bag. Now, whether we carry our money around in wallets or purses, money clips or fanny packs, Jesus warns us not to get too attached to what we prize or treasure. Your valuables can get stolen by someone with sticky fingers. But even if no one winds up stealing your treasures, they'll still wear out eventually. We bought a Honda Accord last year. It wasn't new when we bought it. It was used, but it was new to us. In fact, it's the newest car we've ever had. We had just paid off our Honda minivan. We had no car payments. We were celebrating that. A month later, I hit a deer on 69 Highway and totaled our minivan. So we had to do something new. We decided at that time that we were done with minivans. Our kids were old enough. We didn't need that anymore. We wanted something more youthful and energetic. So as we drove the sleek, low-mileage sedan off the car lot, we promised ourselves that we would wash it more often. We would vacuum it more frequently. We would not allow papers and receipts and wrappers to accumulate on these new floorboards. The kids are not going to eat fast food in this car like they did in our minivan. There would be no French fries down in the crevices, no chocolate milkshakes left to sour in this new car. Oh, don't look at me, it's happened to you too. So when my wife backed into a parked car and cracked the rear bumper, it was all over. The shine was gone. Now, I will admit that a few weeks later, I accidentally backed my car into that car and left a mark on the driver's side door. So there's plenty of blame to go around here, most of it to her, but let's don't dwell on that. My point is that once the bumper on your new car is busted, and once there's an indentation on the driver's side door, it just loses that zippy newness that it had when you drove it off the lot. Have you ever had an experience like that with your new car? Or with a new pair of shoes that you loved? Or with that washing machine you bought? Or that new phone you have? Or your new house? Or on and on. One of my favorite authors is a guy named Alan de Botton, and he has this book called The Architecture of Happiness. In that book, he explores all the different ways that beautiful surroundings, beautiful environments, beautiful walkways, and beautiful objects, and beautiful buildings can enhance our lives, providing us a home that gives us a kind of psychological balance and calls us to be our best selves and live our best lives. But even so, he writes, quote, "Our buildings have a grievous tendency to fall apart again with precipitate speed. It can be hard to walk into a freshly decorated house without feeling preemptively sad at the decay, impatiently waiting to begin. How soon the walls will crack, the white cupboards will yellow, and the carpets stain." End quote. Now, when you have money or other nice things, the problem isn't so much in having them. The problem is that in having them, they often bend our lives out of shape. They try to claim our first and best attention. And in that way, they become objects of worry and concern and fret. Even the best things money can buy will break, fray, fade, depreciate, or get stolen. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This principle can apply to our lives in a great many ways. If your treasure is money, your heart will be set on money, but your treasure might not be money and the things that money can buy, like nice houses or nice cars or clothes or vacations or whatever else it can buy. Your treasure might be something else. It might be comfort or safety or familiarity or conflict avoidance or revenge or the perfect family or reputation or status or power. Our treasure can be a great many things. Don't miss how radical, how fresh, and how strange this teaching is today. Jesus teaches us that the real question is not whether we're religious people. That's a fairly uninteresting question. We might like that question, are we religious? At least it can be answered one way or the other. If we're religious or we're the kind of people who frequent and are involved as a church member, we can pat ourselves on the back for those accomplishments. But Jesus' question for us is much sharper and penetrates more deeply into the center of who we are. Not, are you a religious person? That he's uninterested in. But instead, the question is this: what do you treasure? What do you value? To what have you given your heart? It turns out that sometimes people like us can even go to church or do something religious to distract ourselves from the painful truth that we have actually given our hearts to something rather small and selfish. Now, the question cuts just as deeply for those who like to pretend that they aren't religious, right? Non-religious people have convinced themselves that they've seen through this religion game. They've outsmarted it. They don't need it like we do. But Jesus teaches that this, too, is a silly approach to life. Everyone worships something. That's the point of what Jesus is teaching. We worship whatever we value. We worship and treasure whatever it is that gets our time, our attention, our energy, and our effort. Your religion might be your alma mater if you're proud of your university. I have a friend, no kidding, who will be buried in a casket with his school colors and logo on it. Your treasure might be your retirement account or your children, their performance in school or sports or whatever. Your treasure might be your career. Your religion might be your family or your alleged independence from other people. So the question comes just as forcefully to those of us who see themselves free from church, free from the religious life. The question is still there: to what have you given your heart? The problem with treasuring what can't last is that our best attention and energy will get diverted into something that isn't all that important. And in that situation, we'll leave ourselves utterly unprepared for the arrival of God's fresh grace and power in our lives. That's why Jesus then tells that little parable about those unprepared for a home invasion. Jesus warns us against getting so deeply and intensely devoted to what we treasure that we're left unprepared to move off in new directions when the opportunity comes. So let me ask you these questions. What's currently getting your best attention? What are you daydreaming about? What is it that gets your best effort that you're working to accomplish right now? Is it a healthy pursuit, leaving room for other projects and other people? And if this project or passion of yours failed somehow or disappeared, could you still be okay? Could you still live with joy? Do your current plans leave room for you to be generous and share with other people? Do your plans leave room in terms of money and energy and time and relationships for new things to happen that you hadn't planned on? These are hard but wonderful questions, my friends. Don't be afraid, little flock. That's what Jesus calls you, his little flock. And when he refers to us that way, he reminds us who we are. We are the sheep of God's pasture. We're the beloved children in a new family with the protection of a parent's love. We are the objects of God's creative delight and deep joy. And we are all awash in God's abundant gifts. And all of us together are learning to say, "Here's my heart, Lord. Here's my heart."